Baseball Tonight is presented by LinkedIn Jobs.
Way out of here. Oh,
this is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, April 26th, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Tim Kirkjian. I have no idea where I am at the moment. It was a late night, and I really have no idea where poor Buster Olney is. He did the game last night in San Diego and then was trying to get home somehow today. The game ran late. It was almost 5 hours long, so he's probably circling an airport somewhere right now. Best to Buster. Carl Ravitch filling in for him today. Okay, so let's get started with some news and notes. Christian Yelich's recovery is on hold because of a back issue. Yelich, 29, hasn't played since April 11th and was eligible to come off the injured list on Saturday, but that won't be happening anytime soon. Quote, with Christian, we've hit a plateau, manager Craig Counsell said. Nothing bad happened yesterday, Friday. We're just at a plateau. We're trying to rule everything out and get a new piece of information. Yelich left the game April 11th with back soreness and was doing work on the field as recently as Friday, but he has yet to take a full outdoor batting practice. His recovery is momentarily on hold. Okay, Friday night, Jacob deGrom was absolutely unhittable again. No walks, 15 strikeouts against the Nationals. He now has 50 strikeouts in his first four starts. That's the most strikeouts any pitcher has ever had in his first four starts since the mound was moved to its current distance in 1893. He also got a couple more hits, so now he has more RBIs this year, two, than earned runs allowed. One, he has scored three runs this season and allowed four runs, only one of them earned. That's how great Jacob deGrom has been. And this reminds all of us about Pedro Martinez 1999-2000. Have we seen anything quite this dominant like we've seen from deGrom here in April? I'm not sure we have. He has been breathtakingly good. So let's get to the good stuff. The A's finally lost the game after 13 consecutive wins.
Now the 3-2 to Matt, and that's on the outside corner, ring him up. And the inning is over, and the ball game is over. And the A's, what a tremendous run they had. Better than 2 weeks without losing a ball game to win 13 straight and 14-15. It ends on this Sunday in Baltimore as the Orioles knock off the A's by the final of 8-1.
Madison Bumgarner pitched a seven-inning no-hitter, which is not going to count as a no-hitter. And Carl Ravitch and I will talk about that later.
First pitch to Ozuna. He lines one to right at Josh Rojas. And seven no-hit innings for Madison Bumgarner as the D-backs sweep a doubleheader from Atlanta, 7-0. The D-backs pouring onto the field and congratulating Bumgarner. Seven no-hit innings for Bumgarner, a complete game shutout, and the D-backs win 7-0.
Shohei Ohtani hit his seventh home run of the season, matching his total from last year.
And here's the next pitch, and Shohei Ohtani lifts a high fly ball. This one is carrying deep out into center field. It's out of here! Showtime as Ohtani connects. That's home run number seven of the season for him. That's a club high right now, and Shohei has given the Angels a 3-2 lead.
So the final game of the series between the Padres and Dodgers was just spectacular. The Padres won 8-7, and the amazing Fernando Tatis Jr. hit a solo home run in the fourth inning.
The 2-2, that's Velo, and Tatis hammers this one to right center. Did he do it again? Betts at the wall. That one is two rows deep, and Tatis has his fifth homer in his last three games at Dodger Stadium. The Padres are on the board.
Dustin May last night became the youngest Dodger starter since Clayton Kershaw to strike out 10 in a game, and this was his 10th strikeout.
Here's a 2-2 and a fastball at 99. Another strikeout for Dustin May. He's into double digits. He's got 10.
Chris Taylor is off to a really good start. He hit a three-run homer last night, making it look like a Dodger runaway.
3-0 to Taylor. He swings at it and drives this one to right center field. It is deep. Grisham's at the wall. He looks up. It's a row in. A three-run shot for Chris Taylor. He's been huge for them lately. The Dodgers add three more and have made it a blowout. It is 7-1, Los Angeles.
Amazingly, the Padres came back to tie this game 7-7 in the ninth. Manny Machado single tied it up.
Here it comes. This one on the ground and into center field. The game is tied. Machado does it. Wow, we are at first and third, and Grisham is 90 feet away.
And the Padres' Eric Hosmer gave San Diego an 8-7 lead with a sacrifice fly in the 11th inning.
He swings and drives this one deep to center field. It's going to be playable from Peters. He catches it shy of the track. Tatis tags and scores easily. And it's the Padres who have come all the way back from 7-1 and lead it 8-7.
The Padres completed a remarkable comeback last night. And here is the final call on ESPN Radio.
Seager rolls it over, and that'll do it. A ground ball to Tatis in the shift, steps on second, and pounds the glove. He scored four of the eight runs. The Padres rally from 7-1 down and shock the Dodgers 8-7.
All right, the Dodgers streak of 228 victories in a row with a six-run lead had been the second longest streak over the last 20 years behind an active streak for the Cardinals. And before we get to our pinch hitter, Carl Ravitch, today, baseball is back, and so are your favorite teams and players. Catch the best of the bigs all season on ESPN Plus with more than 170 live MLB games featuring every star and every team in the league. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com/baseball. And the NFL draft is on Thursday. Check out the first draft podcast with Mel Kiper, Todd McShay, and Field Yates for last-minute insights into teams' drafting strategies. You can listen to First Draft wherever you get your podcasts.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
All aboard. It's the Ravi Train with Carl Ravitch. On Baseball Tonight.
So we are joined by Carl Ravitch, who in my mind is the best studio host in the business and a great play-by-play guy. And last night, Ravi got to do both of those. So Ravi, take me through this. You hosted Baseball Tonight with Doug Glanville and myself. We finished at 7, and then you did the radio at 7. Explain how you got from one studio to the other and was able to call the Padre-Dodger game last night.
Yeah, so I mean, we use the ESPN time warp machine, which I know you're not familiar with yet, but you will become familiar. So I left our studio and I just stepped into a tube and I pressed a button and I became particles. And then the particles get transferred down to the radio station and you then press the other button. And when they first pressed the button, I actually came back in the form of Buster Olney. So that was a mistake. I had to be put back into the machine. They repressed the button. Then I came back, believe it or not, in the form of John Crux. The whole thing was messed up. But the third time they pressed it, I came back in the form of myself, and I was able to do the game. So it was a wild little trip for a few minutes, but we were able to get it done. Truthfully, I just kind of lightly jogged from one studio to the other and was there in plenty of time. We had taped the open to the show, so not a problem.
All right. Well, great job, Ravi. So just quickly, I will recap the Dodgers-Padres series. They played seven games. Padres won four out of seven, outscored the Dodgers 32-30. 45 innings in those seven games were within one run. So it was a wildly competitive series. It was fantastic. And last night was a perfect capper to the seven games that they played over the last two weekends. So, Ravi, you called the game on the radio. What was that like calling that game when it was over after six and then it was still going in the 10th?
Well, we got a chance to see baseball tonight, and then we got a chance to see baseball tomorrow because it ended after midnight. You know, you kind of go into certain games, and there are certain things that you know are possible. And one of them was the Dodgers bullpen, given the guys that weren't available, was going to be an issue. And Dustin May was really, really, really good. You know, his velocity was great. His control was great. And they started to get the bullpen guys up, and David Price just didn't get anybody out. And Ruslar Gratterall didn't get anybody out. And it just opened up floodgates. And to the Padres' credit, this wasn't, we're going to score seven runs in an inning. They chipped away. They got two runs, and they got two runs, and then they got two more runs. So the bullpen really let Dave Roberts down. And I thought that Jace Tingler was, you know, a little bit of a gambler in the 10th inning. I remember Bob Showalter, you know, walking Barry Bonds. Here we are with starting runner on second base. He moves to third, and he decided to intentionally walk Max Muncy and Chris Taylor. And we bring Clayton Kershaw up because we're out of bench players, because we're running so late, and we've used every one of our pitchers. So Kershaw comes up, and he strikes out, and then they get the last out, and it worked out. So it was a lot of intensity, and for the first time, Tim, in a strange emotional kind of turnabout for me, having seen the Padres come all the way back from 7-1 for the first time, and you know I'm a proponent of runner on second, but it felt a little weird that the Padres had chipped away and rallied from 7-1 to 7-7, and now we're going to just have a runner on second, and they could have lost the game after doing all that work to come back because of a runner on second. It didn't turn out that way, but that was the first time that I experienced a game in which a team came all the way back and we're utilizing this runner on second, and it can end so quickly and all your efforts can go for naught. But I can't do both. I can't straddle the fence and hop on one bandwagon and then the next night on the other. So I still love the idea of the runner on second, but there was something about last night that felt a little off to me.
All right. First off, that's the second six-run comeback victory by the Padres over the Dodgers in their history. The other one was in 1998, and that's the first time the Dodgers have been up six and lost the game since 2011 against the Phillies. But Ravi, look, you and I are on different sides of this, man, and this is what I've been trying to say. You're exactly right last night. To get six runs in the last three innings and then lose the game potentially with a run in the top of the 10th when they started, that's why I don't like the rule. So we'll just leave it at that. And I understand most people like this rule. I don't. And that is the exact reason why, the way you said it perfectly, is the Padres deserved more than potentially losing in the top of the 10th. Switching gears, Fernando Tatis Jr. This guy is ridiculous. He's got seven homers this year, six are against the Dodgers. He's the first shortstop ever, Dodger shortstop or visiting shortstop, to hit a home run in three straight games at Dodger Stadium. What, what was it like watching him last night and through this entire series?
Yeah, so, you know, Chris, my wife, the great Christino, I had woken up and I said, you know, when you play Little League or you have children that play Little League, and there's always the shortstop who's just better than everybody else. And it's not because he can only hit the ball over the wall. He can throw the ball harder, more accurately, faster than anyone else. He can run faster than anyone else. He's just in the middle of everything. And last night was such a great example of how Tatis is in the middle of everything. Because not only does he hit the home run, which gave him the 5-3 game, but he makes two errors. Like, because the ball is always hit to you, he has a ball. He had two balls drilled at him. And in fact, I don't even know if they gave him an error on the second one, but he had two balls misplayed. And you're like, well, if he's, you know, if he's the greatest thing ever, he makes those plays. And nobody could make the plays because these were rockets that short hopped him. So he's in the middle of that. He scores 4 of the 8 runs primarily because of his legs. His sprint speed from first to third twice was under 7 seconds. One of them was, I think, 6.19. So he goes from first to third. He goes from first to third on a ball, a ground ball to left field. This wasn't a single into the right center field gap. This was a ground ball through the hole to left field, and he goes first to third. So he does things at a level that no one else does to me consistently. He looks the part. There was a sequence during our Baseball Tonight show where you had every single great baseball player ask the question, who's the most exciting player in baseball? And every one of them, from Mike Trout to Juan Soto to Ronald Acuna, said Tatis. And last night was exactly that. He is the most exciting player in baseball. He's got those glasses. He's got, I think it was Bregman, like, he's got the glasses. He's got the hair. He's got the uniform. He's got the body. He's got it all. And of course, he's sort of Willis Reading, and you understand what that means, because a couple of weeks ago, like, his shoulder fell off, and somehow miraculously they reattached it, and he's hitting homers, and his shoulder is not falling off. So he is that guy. He continues to sort of deliver in these moments, and you just have to watch him, because there will be some bad in amongst all the great, and that's what this sport is all about. Nobody performs at a level where you're always great. Not Babe Ruth, not Barry Bonds, not Mike Trout, not Juan Soto, and not Fernando Tatis. That's the beauty of the game. It exposes you sometimes. It's wonderful.
Right. But, and you're right 100%, but he was great all weekend. He and Barry Bonds are now the only two visiting players ever to have multi-homer games back-to-back at Dodger Stadium. And Tatis is the only player ever to have multi-homer games back-to-back against Cy Young winners. He did it against Clayton Kershaw on Friday and Thursday, and then against Trevor Bauer on Friday. It was remarkable. Now, Randy, he covered his eye against Trevor Bauer as he ran around the bases, kind of mocking Bauer, like, you close your eye, one eye, when you pitch, I'm going to do this to you. And he had an interesting run around the bases for his second homer. Are you okay with what Fernando Tatis did? And are you okay with the way that Bauer took it all?
Yeah, well, I love the way that Bauer took it. And I'm guessing, you know, just having been involved with sports your entire life, that there are certain people and guys and girls, I imagine, that you compete against who you understand are enjoying themselves. Like, there's, to me, I watch Tatis, and I don't think that there's anything deeply personal about what he did to Bauer. It was more in response and in a playful way, rather than in a vengeful way. So he covered his eye because, look, Bauer went out in spring training and he pitched with one eye closed. like no one does that. Even if you can do it, why are you doing it? What's the point? The point is, I can do this and I want everyone to know that I can do this. So there should be some type of reaction to it. And I think my observation of Tatis is he does it in a very playful way. Like, sure, I can probably hit with one eye closed, but I'm not going to go up there and do it. But I'm going to make fun of you because you brought it to everyone's attention. I don't think he covers an eye after hitting a home run against Trevor Bauer if Trevor Bauer never closed his eye when he pitched, meaning he's not going out of his way to instigate something against a pitcher just because he hit a home run. That was a response and a playful response. And I have no problem with the way he runs or rounds the bases. I kind of like his little move. He gets to third base. He kind of delays. And then as if he's entering a red carpet, he sort of hop steps onto third base and then runs home. I enjoy it. Maybe it's the way his entire package is put together that there's a playful appearance about him. But I think that's how he's perceived by most players. I don't think it's personal, and that's why I think it's okay. And I love the way that Bauer said, look, dude, it's a home run. He should celebrate. Hitting is hard. Hitting home runs is really hard. And lastly, on the Tatis homer against Dustin May, I do wonder if these guys who can, quote-unquote, well, they'll always hit fastballs, I think the fastballs are now at a level where, you know, they may not always hit fastballs, but there's going to be a group of them, and Tatis is in that group, that can hit any fastball because he's that talented. He'll figure out how to time 99. He'll figure out if it's 101 that he can hit that. But I think we're going to see a distinction now between even those guys that allegedly can hit a fastball. I think there's going to be even more distinction between the ones that really can, and Tatis is in there, and Acuna's in there, and not everybody else can actually do that. And that will show itself more late innings against relievers who all throw 99. Not everybody can do that. And that's why relievers are so effective. And maybe someday they'll catch up. I'm not sure it's while you and I are doing baseball games. I think we're going to see a greater now marked distinction between the Trouts and the Acuna's and the Soto's and the Tatis's versus having a lot of guys that can do that.
Yeah, totally agree. Okay, Ravi, the other really big story yesterday was the Braves became the first team ever to play a doubleheader and only get a total of one hit in the doubleheader. Now, granted, both games were seven innings, so that changes the dynamic a little bit. In the first game, Zach Gallen threw a one-hitter, gets credit for a shutout, as he should, of course, in a seven-inning game. And in the second game, Madison Bumgarner pitched a no-hitter, but it's not going to be counted officially as a no-hitter because it was only a seven-inning game. Where do you stand on that rule? I think I know.
Yeah, I think it's completely ridiculous. And I tried to think of an analogy, and one that I came up with was, so you're driving in a town that before it grew had one road, and the speed limit on the one road was 55 miles an hour. And now all of a sudden there are a lot of people living in this town, and we've got several roads, and we decided to lower the speed limit to 30 miles an hour. So when we're driving on the road and we get pulled over, well, we don't then say, well, at one point it was 55 miles an hour, so you can't give me a ticket even though now it's 30. Of course I can give you a ticket. I'm crediting you with driving too fast. It was now 30. You're doing 55. Here's your ticket. The rule said that that game is seven innings long. I once was credited with a no-hitter when I pitched a nine-inning game. Now that I'm pitching a complete game, which is seven innings by your rules and your definitions, you change the speed limit. I didn't give up a hit. I don't get a ticket for throwing a no-hitter. Of course I do. It's seven innings long. That's all that I could do. I didn't give up a hit. The rule needs to be rewritten because Major League Baseball rewrote the rules. Of course you should be given full credit. It should be recognized as a no-hitter, because that's what the game was. It wasn't as if we had a rain out in four innings and you hadn't given up a hit. We all understand that. But we dictated seven innings is the length of this game. I didn't give up a hit. That's a no-hitter. And by the same token, this concept of putting the runner on second base, Tim, you know, you come from behind and all of a sudden you lose in the 10th, even though you rallied from six runs. I don't think I would have felt that way if the game was seven innings last night and the Padres came back and it was 7-6 at the end of seven that I would have sat there and said, oh, God, I wish they played nine because the comeback isn't over yet. Like, if you know it's seven innings, then you better damn get your comeback done by the end of the seventh inning because there's no more innings. And in the case of a guy that throws a no-hitter for seven innings, if that's the length of the game predetermined, you deserve credit, recognition, notification, emails, text, whatever the heck it is, that it would go down in the record books as a no-hitter.
Right, now, to be clear about this, I checked with my guy at the Elias Sports Bureau. And as you know, Ravi, I call the people at Elias like every day of my life. I love those guys. Now, they met with Mick. They met with major league officials before last season began and said, okay, what are we going to do here if there is a seven inning no hitter? What do you want to do? And they agreed, and Major League Baseball agreed, that they went back to a rule set up in 1991, a special committee for statistical accuracy, a committee chaired by Faye Vincent at the time, and they determine anything less than nine innings will not be considered a no-hitter. It will be considered a notable achievement, and it will be noted as such in the Elias Book of Baseball Records. But it's still not a no-hitter. So, Ravi, again, you're going to repeat yourself here. Either we have to play all nine-inning games, or we have to change this rule. Is it that simple?
Tim, the room that you just described sounded like a really smart room in 1991. In 2021, to go back and die on that hill, honest to God, they sound like a bunch of morons. Of course, you've got to change the determination of no-hitter versus not a no-hitter. You, the same people in that room, change the rules of the game. Madison Bumgarner, to his credit, and whether he accomplished the no-hitter in seven innings, said after the game, I like the seven-inning doubleheader. It may be because he threw a no-hitter, but I actually heard in my world him saying, like many players, we like the seven-inning doubleheader, regardless if he gave up no hits or seven hits. He likes the concept. The concept is now part of Major League Baseball. I don't think it's going away. I think there's a lot of things about the seven-inning game that appeals to a lot of the people that watch it, to a lot of the people that play it, and to a lot of the people that govern it. Maybe not those that own it because it cuts into their profits for two innings, but that's beside the point. That room sounds like we made a decision in the moment and we have no ability to see into the future. Let me ask you this, Tim. If Theo Epstein and the rest of those that are making the adjustments to the game decide that next year we're going to have every Major League Baseball game be 12 innings long, that's what we want to do, that's the new rule in Major League Baseball, and you throw a no-hitter for nine of those 12, but in the 10th inning you give up three home runs, do you get credited with a nine-inning no-hitter but a loss because you gave up three runs in the 10th? What do you think the answer to that is?
Well, your point is well made, Ravi. This is a very confusing
situation. Of course not. You know that. I know that. Of course you wouldn't. The game is 12 innings long. So what if you threw a no-hitter for nine innings? It's 12 innings. The same has to apply in the reverse.
This is exhausting going through this. I totally agree with you. And something needs to be done with this rule, because it just if we're going to play seven, we have to play by a different set of rules. Okay, just to finish, Ravi, we have to acknowledge that the A's, their 13-game winning streak ended yesterday. 13 in a row ties three other teams with the longest winning streak in April in Major League history. The A's, of course, are the only team ever now to start out 0-6 and then win 10 games in a row at any point in that season. They got it to 13. Matt Olson drove in 16 runs during the streak. The A's hit 24 homers. They had a 2.68 ERA. Mark Canna did a great job as the leadoff guy in that spot. What do you make of the A's starting out 0-6 and then figure out a way to win 13 in a row?
Well, I think what you do is you take the adage that every team or every player that starts out really lousy, and they'll say, well, If I did this during the middle of the season, nobody would really pay nearly as much attention. And when you start 0-6, everyone's paying attention because, as you know, with the Orioles years ago, how bad this start can be and what it can lead to. In the case of the A's, the refrain was, we're not nearly this bad, and they're not nearly as good as 13 wins in a row. But I think that we, as a society, are all benefactors of the A's success. Because when the A's win, that means they're on more, they have a great fan base, and thankfully, we all get more Dallas Braden. And in the end, we all need as much Dallas Braden in our lives as we can get. So the more success the A's have, the more we get a chance to see that guy. And we know, you know, kind of like the Muppets, when Braden is out there, we all win. And we need more of Braden than the A's. I'm glad they're playing well.
Okay, Ravi, thank you so much for bailing us out this morning. Poor Buster got trapped in a red eye and I missed his flight or something, who knows. But thanks for getting up early after working so late to help us out. And don't forget, I need you to bring me a belt today. I left my belt at home, and I'm not going to go spend $50 on a new belt for one night. So bring me a belt from your house. I'm going to borrow it for one night. Yeah. Is that okay?
Of course. I will consult with the great Christina. We will pick out the proper belt. And I'm just going to end with these comments. Poor Buster. Poor him.
Okay, Ravi, thanks so much. And you, Eduardo Perez, and I are doing the Braves against the Cubs tonight, 7:00 on ESPN. I can't wait. And we're getting a Braves team that just got one hit in a doubleheader, only team in history ever to do that, to repeat. So great things ahead tonight, too.
It'll be 17 innings, and the team will come back from 9 runs, and then they'll lose with a runner on second, and we'll all fall asleep together. It'll be great.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Over the weekend, Buster only caught up with Manny Machado and asked him about the time he met Kobe Bryant, his dog, a husky named Kobe, and Fernando Tatis Jr., among other topics.
What do you remember about meeting your idol, Kobe Bryant?
Oh, man. Meeting Kobe, I was nervous. Getting ready for a World Series game, and you know, I was doing some stuff in the gym, and all I hear is, hey, Kobe's here. You want to go take a picture? And I was like, should I go take a picture or should I finish my rehab? I'm getting ready for a game. I'm like, let me just finish right quick and, you know, try to get it done as fast as I could. And all of a sudden, he just walks into the gym. And as soon as I look over, I was actually on the ground. I look over and, you know, I see 6'6" guard. And, you know, I mean, my mind was just mind blown. Man, it was one of the most incredible moments of, I would think, of my entire life. Just, you know, finally just having him up close and, you know, hearing him say, okay, I see you, kid. I see you working, you know, and, you know, I'll never forget those words. And, you know, then meeting him there was, I was starstruck. I mean, I felt like I was a little kid, you know, back in the day when I used to go to baseball games, looking at all my favorite baseball players. And now I have Kobe Bryant in front of me, one of the guys I admire the most in this planet. And, you know, it was just mind blowing. And it's one of those memories that, you know, the more you say it, the more you smile, the more you think about it. And, you know, the better you feel. And, you know, rest in peace. I know he's in a better world, but he's looking over all of us. And, you know, it's just, you know, it's just one of those memories I will never forget.
You've got a Kobe in your life now. Tell us about him.
he's a little mamba as well. Man, he has a lot of energy like Kobe did. And, you know, he always brings that smile to your face every single day whenever you get home. And, you know, no matter if you go for 4 or 4 for 4 that day, you know, he's always excited to see you. And he just makes your night better every single day when you get home, when you walk through that door. So it's, you know, it's awesome to have little Kobe by my side always.
describe the energy of the guy who plays to your left.
Oh, man. He's a spark. He could turn a game around in a heartbeat, whether it's with a bat, with the glove, making a nice play, or even on the base paths. I think that's where I love seeing him the most is, whenever he's making those crazy slides back to first base where I'm like, oh man, he's out for sure. And all of a sudden he gets out of it and beats that throw or beats the slide. And it's incredible to watch him, and he brings the best out of all of us. And whenever he's on that field healthy, it's a pleasure to watch.
You like to wear cologne on the field. What are you going to wear on Sunday night? What type of responses do you get from people on the field about it?
Oh man, I get all types. Umpires always ask me, "Hey, that smells pretty good, man. What's the name of that?" Players always, I think that's the biggest one. Right before a game, you go out there and you start chatting to all the guys and center field, and like, man, damn, that's a nice cologne. I learned this from Big Poppy. Big Poppy always smelled good. So, I'll be wearing a Louis Vuitton a cologne on tomorrow night. Well, tonight, I would say. And it's one of my favorites. It smells good. It lasts on your skin pretty well, and it stays on the jersey well. So, it could at least last on 9 innings. Some of the colognes I've had in the past kind of fade off after a couple slides, but this one stays on pretty good.
What do you love about stylized cleats?
Just shows your, shows your personality, shows who you are. I think it's kind of tough in this game for people who really know who you are. And, whenever you could accessorize, whether it's with an arm sleeve, your glove, your bat, your batting gloves. I'm lucky enough and blessed that I'm part of the Jordan brand, and I'm able to customize my own cleat. They do a good job over there with letting us show our expressions and do what we like. And every November we always enjoy our time with the brand and with our connection and our core group there, that we get to customize the shoes for every year. And, that's where I get to show off my swag and show my express and show who I am. I'm a loud guy. I like classy things, but I also like going on the exotic side. So, I like blending it in all the way around. And, this year I did a special one for, our Sunday for our troops, around the world. To wear them every single Sunday and, also on the road.
Describe your cleats, the cleats you're wearing on Sunday Night Baseball.
Sunday night, I'm about to bring out my gold. I love golds. I think it's a special night, Sunday Night Baseball. Everybody be watching. I guess I'll bring out my gold ones tonight. And, those are special ones. Those are all gold. They match perfect with our unis. I wanted to go a little loud this year and, these are definitely doing the job, and I've got a lot of great compliments on them. So, we got to keep them going, and they got hits as well. So,
describe your nerves with two outs in the ninth inning of Joe Musgrove's no hitter.
Oh my God! Oh, actually, I wasn't that nervous as I was like in the seventh or sixth inning. I think there you're kind of like when you start kind of realizing. I looked up and I'm like, man, is this really going on right now? I'm like, he had just walked Gallo, and I'm like, I think, and then after that inning, we go in, I think it was the sixth. I'm like, man, I think this is it. And that's when you starts kicking in. You're like, oh man, let's not talk about it. Let me not think about it. But you're still nervous at the same time, which is a crazy feeling. But, once I get to that ninth inning, two outs, I'm like, all right, let's go. Come on. We got this in the bag. I'm like, come on, hit it this way. Let's just get this over with. And, you're just locked in. I mean, I felt like, World Series game all over again, like I've been in before. And, just to be a part of that, and then finally get that ground ball, we get the out. I've never been a part of that. I just can't even describe the feeling of it, honestly. I keep saying different things because it was just a lot of different emotions. But I'm glad it could have happened to a better person than Joe, and a kid that grew up in San Diego. It couldn't be written any better. Honestly, and I'm just grateful to be part of it. And experience that with him and experience that with the organization.
Describe the state of the Padres Dodgers rivalry.
It's awesome, man. I mean, they're a great team out there, and they're holding that throne. We got a team over here that we're trying to take them down, and you know, it's going to be a battle. It's going to be a grind. And, you know, these last couple games have been awesome. And we've been out there and grinding back and forth. And, you know, it's going to be a fun year. You know, we're two great baseball teams. And, you know, we're trying to compete for that title. And, you know, they're ahead of us right now. But, you know, we're going to continue to keep grinding, keep getting better every single day. And, you know, play these games like it's our last game. And, you know, we've seen that before. So it's been fun. It's been fun baseball. I'm not going to lie.
Manny, this is great. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Timmy. It is Bleacher Tweets for Monday. Let's go to our guy, PK Steinberg, at PK Steinberg. He writes in, Tatis makes a lot of errors. Is he making bad decisions, or do you think he's trying to live up to some weird expectations placed on him, or is it because he's still young yet? We praised him, and this isn't nitpicking either. What do you think the deal is with the errors?
Well, he's a young guy. I mean, he's 14 years old playing in the big leagues. It's amazing how good he is. And yes, a lot of guys make errors because they're so remarkably athletic. They think they can do anything out there. They can make every play, no matter how hard the ball is hit. They feel like, I'm a spectacular athlete. I can make this play, when sometimes they can't. He had a great defensive season last year. He only made three errors the whole year in a 60-game season. This is nothing to worry about. He's brilliant defensively. He's just been a little bit careless, and his athleticism gets the best of him once in a while. That's all it is. No worries about him moving forward as a defensive shortstop.
Next up, we have Blue Jay Josh at Josh Stay. He writes in, the Dodgers-Padres series has been living up to the hype and has a playoff feel. How can we capture this with more teams in baseball?
Well, that's a great question. The reason these games are so good is the teams are so good. You could make a very strong case that these are the two best teams in baseball here, the Dodgers and the Padres. That's mostly why the games are so great. Plus, they played in the playoffs last year, so there's a rivalry building here. The proximity of the two teams has everything to do with this also. Same division 19 times. And these teams are fun. They're colorful. You know, Trevor Bauer is a fun guy to watch. The entire Padre team is a fun guy to watch. But you can't go take two teams that aren't very good and don't have colorful, you know, charismatic players and say, all right, we want you to duplicate what the Dodgers and Padres did. You have to have the right players, and they have to be willing to enjoy themselves as the Dodgers and Padres have.
Next up, we have Crone Apprentice at S. Seinberg. This person writes in, between the Giants and the A's over in Oakland, it's shaping up to be an amazingly underrated surprise for the entire Bay Area. Real or small sample size for both these teams? What do you think about the A's and the Giants?
Well, the A's are for real. Look, I know how much they lost in the offseason. Liam Hendricks, Marcus Semien, those are big losses, but they've rebuilt that team to some degree. They won 97 games each of the last 2 years. This isn't a team going from 500 winning 13 games in a row. That's a good team. Now, I'm not sure about the Giants. They've played exceptionally well so far. They've pitched unbelievably well. And every time Kurt Casale catches, there seems to be a shutout. It's remarkable. Kevin Gausman was just incredibly good the other day. So they're better than people thought they were, including me, but I still don't think they're a playoff team, not in that division with the Dodgers and Padres being so good. But the Giants are an interesting club. We got to keep our eyes on them. I wouldn't be surprised if they stayed in this longer, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if the A's won the West again.
Last one for the day, and I think we got this question the other day, but I thought it was a good fit for you. Isaac Rice writes in, at Isaac T. Rice. So the other day we talked about the orange ball and the late, great Charles O'Finley, and his question is, who was on your Mount Rushmore for team owners?
Well, Bill Veeck has got to be on the top of the list just because of all the wacky stuff that he did. I mean, he brought in Eddie Gaedel, who, you know, was 3'7" tall to play in a major league game. He's the only guy I know who played in the big leagues that I'm taller than. So Bill Veeck has to be up there. Charlie Finley has to be up there. I mean, he wanted Vita Blue to change his name from Vita Blue, which what a great name that is anyway. He wanted him to change his name to True Blue. I think all the Dodger owners have to be in there somewhere with, you know, the O'Malley family with all the things they did. George Steinbrenner has to be in there for all the things that he did. And Ted Turner, at least in my lifetime, has to be in there also because he owned the Braves. He had Andy Messersmith as one of his pitchers. And they were on the Superstation back then, and it was Channel 17 was the Superstation. So he wore number 17, Messersmith did. And Ted Turner, the owner, told him, I want you to put, instead of your name on the back of your jersey, I want you to put the word channel. So the back of your jersey would say Channel 17 instead of Messersmith 17. And that would really draw more people to the Superstation. So I think you got to go with, Bill Veeck, Ted Turner, George Steinbrenner, and the O'Malleys, and Charles Finley on the outside.
There you have it, everyone. That is Bleacher Tweets for Monday. Thank you for writing in. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks there, Timmy. Thanks for stepping in there, Juan. Appreciate it.
All right, Taylor. Crazy morning, crazy night last night in baseball, but it's such a great game. Thank goodness.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.